I'll just let you guys fire questions. Because you never use my opening statement anyway, so.
Do you have an opening
statement? No, I don't. So, there you
I mean, what do you hope to accomplish today? Knock off a few more counties?
Yeah, one of the things we're doing is organizing in all the 99 counties. And we've been now to over 30. We have county chairmen at over 60. We understand that the process of Iowa is, you know, it's the old-fashioned, just knock it out, county at a time. Get people, structure, organization. And that's what we're doing.
You have been in the news recently for something you said.
I noticed that, yeah.
Did you expect that kind of attention to the statement when you made it?
No, I really didn't. I mean, it was made on a Saturday afternoon satellite radio interview. So it was not like a venue. I said, hey, if I go out and say something really bold, I'll be in the news all week. If I had contemplated or anticipated or even had calculated that, I think most people are smart enough and media savvy enough to know that the time to do that would be on a Sunday talk show or perhaps, you know, at an event like this where the focus of the nation's political attention is. But to have an interview, I just simply was saying what I truly felt and feel. That's why I take nothing back. It was not calculated on my part. It was expression of how I believe this Iranian deal needs to be looked at. It's very dangerous. And it's dangerous not just for Israel. It's dangerous for America. And I've read the whole thing, and I just couldn't believe my eyes as I read it. And I thought, we essentially just wrote a blank check to the Iranian government. What were we thinking?
What's been the fallout?
What's that?
What's been the fallout? Positive for your campaign? Negative?
Overwhelmingly positive. And the strongest support I have had has been from the Jewish community. I mean, if you read some of the mainstream media accounts, you would think that, oh, Jewish community is incensed with this. That is certainly not true. In fact, on Monday night, I was at an event in New York with a completely Jewish audience. And there were a number of Holocaust survivors and families of Holocaust survivors at the meeting. I got hugs. They were grateful. They totally understood. Not only understood, but they were extremely grateful and supported that somebody was telling the truth and being clear about it. Because so many of them know the history. They understand that the naivete that existed back in the 30s when Neville Chamberlain came back from the so-called peace accord and decided that there will be peace in our time. Winston Churchill reacted to that and said, he has given us the choice of war or dishonor, and we have chosen dishonor. And it was a very telling moment, and Churchill was roundly condemned for it. But later, had it not been for Churchill, they might be speaking German in England today.
So now you're comparing it to Neville Chamberlain.
I've always compared it to Neville Chamberlain. I've always said that this is a Chamberlain moment when we need a Churchill. This is a believing that you can somehow sit down and trust people who have already said they're going to kill you. I mean, if people have been reading Mein Kampf for 20 years, which it had been out for 20 years by then, there should have been a clear indication that everything in that book, everything that this whole movement was about, was we're gonna kill the Jews. And people thought, not really going to happen. And so my point is that when you have 36 years of an Iranian government, 36 years openly saying, we're going to wipe Israel off the face of the map, openly saying that we have developed the missiles that will turn Israel into a Holocaust, their words. When you have a government that says, we will make sure that Israel is a one-bomb country, I mean, those are not just the rantings of some blogger in his pajamas sitting down in his parents' basement. This is the official Iranian government. When the president, Ahmadinejad, a few years ago, stood in the well of the United Nations and denied that the Holocaust even happened, why are we not taking these crazies seriously? That's why I'm just amazed that we would make a deal with people who are Holocaust deniers, who have threatened America, who have threatened Israel, who currently hold Americans hostage, who have murdered and kidnapped Americans. And I don't know why we think that somehow we can trust that they're going to let us go in and look around and see if we find any nuclear material.
The chairman of the Republican Party of Iowa is in National Journal this week saying that you have a lot to answer for the death of the Iowa straw poll. Do you feel like you had something to do with its demise, and are Republicans trying to hold you accountable for that?
Well, gosh, I didn't know I was that powerful. I mean, I never knew. I'm grateful for the attention. If I'm personally responsible, there's 17 candidates running for president, and if I singularly kill the straw poll, then you should go ahead and declare me the caucus winner, because that's a heck of a punch I must carry.
But it is you as a former caucus winner saying you're not going to participate in the straw poll. I mean, it was sort of a last straw for the state central committee.
A last straw for the straw?
Yeah.
Again, we're not obligated to make decisions based on what someone else thinks. We have to make campaign decisions based on how do we win the caucus. And that's what we did. And having participated in the caucus and winning, and also having been at straw polls and being involved in the caucuses since 1996, every one of them, for other candidates prior to my own, you know, I felt like that we certainly needed to make a decision that was best for our winning. I wasn't the only one that said I wasn't going to participate, and you know, no one else had committed that they were. So it's a little disingenuous to blame me for it.
Is Iowa going to have the same effect as some years? Some conventional wisdom is then maybe the top three get out of here. But if there's 17 of you doing the math, breaking double digits might win this thing.
It could. And, I mean, I can't answer that because we're so far away from the caucuses. Just remember, 8 years ago at the end of July, Rudy Giuliani was the absolute foregone winner of the whole process. He was the nominee. Fred Thompson was number two. Mitt Romney was number three, and John McCain was number four, and I barely even registered. I mean, I was down there in the asterisk category. A year later, by the time the process had played out, McCain won. I was number two. Romney was third, and Fred Thompson and Rudy Giuliani had zero delegates. So it's really difficult to say at this point, here's what's likely to happen. I don't think any of us can know. Excuse me.
Some of the other Republican candidates besides Rand Paul are starting to talk about criminal justice reform. Is that something that's on your agenda, and is that something that you think as a Republican that the party is ready to accept?
Well, I did more than talk about it when I was governor 10 and a half years. I actually did it. We created drug courts, which was an alternative to just putting nonviolent drug offenders into incarceration. We increased the number of people that went to community-based corrections. It was almost about a dime to the dollar in cost, but it really took nonviolent drug offenders and put them in community-based corrections. We also created a special pathway for people who were technical violators, not people who were on parole and who broke the law by committing a crime, but who technically violated the terms of their parole but did not really commit any crime that harmed anyone. All of those are things that we did, plus we integrated programs like Interchange, which is a faith-based program, into our system. The recidivism rate in those kind of programs was about 15, maybe 10% versus more like 60-70% of recidivism when people are in the main population. So there are a lot of things that we did in our state that I personally championed, and so it's not something that I'm talking about futuristically. It's something that I have a strong record on having already done.
Two more.
Sorry if you did. Did you talk about Planned Parenthood yet, for those of us who can't tell time and get around time?
I probably spoke out as soon and as vociferously as anyone. And one of the things that I find just appalling is that what they did is horrendous. The fact that they're selling body parts and talking about it with such a cavalier and callous attitude is just numbing. It is numbing. I also found that when they're talking about selling body parts, like they're talking about selling the parts of a used Buick, it's so cold and just inhumane. But I think it's time for us to have not just a discussion of ending public funding for Planned Parenthood. Certainly that ought to be a given. That shouldn't even be hard for even pro-choice people to do. But what we need to be talking about is, how can we justify calling ourselves a civilized people when we continue the 42-year-long scourge of taking the lives of innocent unborn children in their mother's womb, 60 million of them since 1973? We need to have the more thorough discussion and conversation, and frankly, we need to finally come to grips with the fact that the destruction of a human life in what ought to be a safe place is simply not the mark of a civilized and sane nation.
What do these videos do? What do you think the implications are? Obviously, there's the defunding effort here, but is there kind of a bigger, longer term? Like, is it that, you know, are these videos that big that we're going to see some kind of longer term change from it?
If anybody can watch those videos and not have their stomach just turn, then I think they have a seared conscience. I just don't know how you can see someone just talking and even looking at a body part and talking about, let's remove them in a way that's less crunchy. Let's talk about when we take that baby out of the mother's womb, do it so that, you know, we don't destroy the more valuable parts like the liver, the heart, and the lungs. I mean, that's disgusting. Excuse me.
The crowds in Iowa, sir, are they bigger or smaller than at this point in time in 2007?
I'm sorry.
The crowds in Iowa.
Oh, my gosh, bigger. We didn't hardly have crowds.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, we're having the kind of crowds now that we didn't have until November or December 8 years ago. A lot of the places we're going, you know, it's standing room only and overflowing and very enthusiastic crowds and people actually signing up, not just me and three other people sitting around a single table at the Pizza Ranch sharing a cheese pizza and me trying to say, well, I'll come back six more times and try to get you to sign up.
One more quick thing. One of your rivals said something about your oven comment being just your attempt to, you know, get attention, that Trump has taken the stage and now everyone else is going to light their hair on fire just to get attention. You think that's true?
They don't know me very well. They don't know that I've been to Auschwitz three times. They have no idea how many times I've been to Israel. They have no idea about the passion that I have for never, ever, ever wanting to see this horror repeated. I've seen up close and personal what happens when people are naive and when they neglect the threats of a government that says we're going to kill people. And I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to stand by and let that happen again without raising my voice to the fullest. I'll be full-throated, full throttle, and I apologize to no one for that.
Thank you.